Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God, and we're going to talk about patterns in society. We all live in society to one degree or another, and we all make choices, and those choices determine the paths of our lives, and they actually mold society as we are members of society. Now, you can't dictate to the rest of the members of society what they should do without becoming a dictator and changing your society in that way. But you can help change society by your choices, by the way in which you choose to interact with each other. And these choices may be very subtle, and they will set the path, the spiritual path, the metaphysical path, the thought path of your society. If you make certain choices, and if you make other choices, another path will be laid out. So your choices will have a great effect upon your environment. You will change it. You will change the environment of society by the choices you make. So I came across an interesting story. It was on the Girl Scouts and what's happening to their camps, and they have a picture of a Girl Scout there with selling Thin Mints, and asked me why I will not sell cookies this year. And actually, you could write a whole article on the cookie sales of the Girl Scouts. The Girl Scouts used to sell cookies they baked. Now they sell cookies that somebody else manufactures, and the girls actually get very little of that money. It goes to supporting the Girl Scouts, and it's a good work project, but it's really somebody's making a lot of money on that, and it isn't the Girl Scouts. And that's part of the path that they have chosen that brings them in that direction, where the girls are out there selling the cookies to every relative they can come across and neighbors, and they're really not benefiting. They'd be better off going out and getting a regular job and sharing some of that money than they would be out there selling the cookies. There's a very top-heavy bureaucratic society that they've created within the Girl Scout politics that is actually undermining the fruits of their labor. And that is just a reflection of what we do in many, many other realms of our society because of the fact that we make certain choices. And I'll give you some examples that they mention in this article about Eagle Island, and we're taking it from an article, Why Are Girl Scouts Camps Being Closed? And it was written by somebody by the name of Rafferty, and they talk about Eagle Island, a 32-acre refuge in Upper Saranac Lake, New York, is a national historical landmark and one of the first and finest examples of a great camp architecture in the Adirondacks. And it was bequeathed to the Girl Scouts back in 1937 by a fairly rich banker, I think it was. And it was to help serve the girls in the urban enclaves of New Jersey. And it had for about 70 years. And it's worth about $3.2 million. And they've decided to sell it instead of open it up. And why have they done that? And there's a great deal of protest, and there's a whole court cases involved with the closure of these camps, because they're closing quite a few camps all around the country. And the Girl Scouts of the USA, which is a kind of a parent organization, have put this, and along with about 200 other camps, up for sale in over 30 different states. And it will affect more than a third of the Girl Scouts' properties that will be for sale in order to get money that they're short on. Evidently, they're not getting enough for the cookies. But actually, it isn't really that they're not getting enough for the cookies and that there's not enough cookies being sold. But the reality is that something else is going on. This 100-year-old organization has woefully underfunded pension plan, according to the CEO. It's currently down some $347 million for their pension plan. Now, I remember when I was in Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts, and nobody was getting paid in our troop. The leaders were volunteer leaders. They didn't get money. So this must be some sort of hierarchy organization. They don't go on the camping trips. They don't help you. They're just to connect everybody and do whatever they do on a national basis. They're not supporting individual camps. It's going through a centralized governmental agency of the Girl Scouts, and they're down $347 million in what they need for their pension fund. In 2007, the Girl Scouts of the USA began consolidating about 312 regional councils into 112. So this is actually more centralization into what they call high-capacity councils. And this was to take advantage of an economic scale of where one person takes care of more areas, you know, or they concentrate their offices. In reality, these central offices really aren't all that necessary. They don't do all that much. They do stuff. And I'd love to be on a fly on the wall when these guys are in their offices working. But some of what they call customers now, which are the Girl Scouts, aren't buying the claims that they're making to raise this $750 million raised annually by cookie sales is going toward defraying this bloated administrative cost. And there's a lot of stuff going on here. The budget, for example, shows $2,000 allocated to replace roofs most in need at camp properties, but nearly $250,000 for upgrades at offices and program centers, including parking lots, repaving landscapes, tax forms, and for 2010, the last year's release showed that out of the more than $6 million in revenue, $3.5 million of that went to staff and benefits. CEO Diane Nelson did not reply to the requests for an interview for the writer of this article. But look at where all the money's going. It's going to people who really don't do anything for the girls themselves. The real people that are down on the road where the rubber meets the road are the people that are actually Girl Scout leaders. Now, the Girl Scout leaders want to go to a camp. Say there's 100 Girl Scout troops that want to have a camp like this $3 million camp. I mean, that's what it's supposedly worth. It was given to them, and they built it up, and it's a camp. It's not a fancy, you know, carpeted administrative building. It may have a building in it, but they could just have linoleum and put down a throw rug, get a used rug that somebody donates. People would still be donating to the Girl Scouts to help them if they saw they didn't have a rug. But they've taken all their money and they've put it into their administration, into the hierarchy. And the actual girls don't get a new roof on their lodges. And of course, their lodges are pretty nice and fancy. When I went to Boy Scout camp, we were in a tent. There were lots of tents, hundreds of tents. Now, they were wood frame tents, but it was just 2x4s and hooked together in the woods. And the trails to the tent were lined with rocks that Boy Scouts put there for free. And you had the canvas tents. And as soon as we were out of our canvas tent, somebody else would come back in. We were kind of camped for a week or 2 weeks, and then somebody else would come in and take over when we left, and they would camp, and then another group, and another group, and another group, and another group, and we paid money to go to that camp. Now, there were meals that we cooked, but there were also daily meals that we got down at a big kitchen and lodge where they made refectory meals, and they had cooks and all that stuff. And that's going to cost money, but we paid money to go to the camp. We actually earned money to support the camp. People donated money to support the camp. And you probably have to have an administrator there to make sure that the camp cooks get hired, and that if we need new canvas for tents or bought, they're just a little business manager. And they may do that full time. Not for 10, 20 boys, but for hundreds, thousands of boys. And so their wages can be paid. But what we have here in the Girl Scouts is millions of dollars going to people who are not actually providing services. They're selling the products of the services and the donations to pay for their personal pensions. You don't need them. You need people on the ground volunteering to help the girls and do the things they need. You need a facility that was donated and is maintained directly by those Girl Scout groups that go to that camp. They want to have a camp. They can count. They know how many girls in each troop. They know how many troops that want to sign on with that district and use that camp. They know what their budget is. They know we're going to have to hire a full-time cook and aide, and maybe we'll get a volunteer or two, and we'll get the girls actually helping with the cooking. That would be a great enterprise. That one day or 2 days a week, each troop will supply some people to run the kitchen, to work in the kitchen, so that they get, 5 days of play and 2 days of work. And they learn how a kitchen is run. And they rotate in a little bit from each troop, and they help with how everything is run. You can actually even turn it into an on-the-job training. I remember a school, a private school, that was having a lot of trouble with funds. And they couldn't support all the janitorial work and this sort of thing that costs money. And so they were trying to cut their budget. And so they started an austerity program where the students had to stay behind for an extra 20 minutes and clean in the school. And each classroom would have groups of people in charge of the bathrooms or in charge of the hallway or in charge of, outside in the parking lot. And they would do certain chores. They still had to have a maintenance man who kind of supervises to make sure that each of these jobs got done. But in 10, 15 minutes with 1,000 students, they got the whole place cleaned up. And you know what happened? Less graffiti. Less trash on the floors. Nobody carving in the desks. Nobody leaving trash around. Everybody participating in the care and upkeep of the school because they had to clean it. They were taking back their responsibilities, and now they were doing and making less work because they were going to have to do it. They had become a part of the process. It was now their school. It wasn't just their football team. It was their school. You could carry that path, that idea, over into learning. Instead of single-age education, start doing more multiple-age education. How many kids want to become teachers? How many kids think they want to become teachers? They should be participating, 1 hour every day, and helping the younger classes. Rotate them in. Maybe one day out of the week, they teach a class. They become the aide. When I was in school, my first grade class, 50 kids, almost. Actually, it was more than 50 kids. I think actually in that class, we had almost 100 children. We had it in the library. And I mean, there were just kids all over the place, because we had almost 30, 40 kids when we went to a regular size schoolroom, and this was like 3-4 times that size. So there was over 50 kids in that classroom. One teacher. It was a nun, but it was one teacher. And she had a pointer stick, and she kept order. And we learned. Now, I actually don't believe in that kind of education. I believe in one-room schoolhouse. I believe in multiple age education, and I believe mostly in homeschooling. But even in homeschooling, I think there's a great value in bringing a number of families together at one time and test one another, pit one another, share information, expand horizons, go on field trips, have people come in and speak. I think all that's a really good idea. That's part of that path. You are not an institutional person. You are a family person. So therefore, your school and education should emulate the family. And the best way to do that is start education in the family. But we are gregarious, so families need to come together and help other families homeschool. And so there is a time when you come together, and there's a time when you work in your own house. And you can measure and challenge one another, because what happens is the real achievers will encourage, by their achievement, others to also achieve. But the critical thing is that you're helping one another. When those families come together, they are helping tutor each other. Tutor the same ages, tutor the younger ages, help take care of one another. And it makes them a gregarious body that cares about one another. That's what you need to do in Girl Scouts. Form your troops. I guess you have like patrols or platoons or whatever within in a troop, the smaller groups. That cell group idea that was in the Boy Scouts, and I assume is similar in the Girl Scouts, is that you have your platoon, your group, and you do projects, but you also do projects with the larger troop that is accumulating all these other smaller groups. Now your larger group gets together with other larger groups, and they do things. I went to a Boy Scout Jamboree once, and I had our mission for this Jamboree, for our troop, was communication. So we were to learn semaphore, Morse code, different forms of communication using lights or flags or the actual telegraph. And we set up a little tower, and we had another little tower across the big huge hall that we were using for this big jamboree. And we would send messages from our tower all the way over to this other tower on the other side. And I came at first, and I was just a message taker. They didn't know that I had actually studied and knew what I was doing. They had guys up there who were, you know, they were hold the flag like this for this letter, hold up, and they were actually learning as they were going, which is okay. But then finally, I got the opportunity to go up there, and I was just whipping the messages out left and right because I had spent an actual couple days learning. And everybody was getting excited once it began to become easier and easier, and there was somebody else over on the other side who was good at the same thing. And several of our guys were becoming good at reading the messages, and so people were sending messages back and forth all across the deal. And then we also got time where we went around and saw what all the other troops were doing. And then we had this large group interaction. Most people don't know it, but this is how major societies throughout the history of mankind has functioned in sometimes what becomes a very hostile world. And I give for an example the Israelites, also the Teutons. They have their Oktoberfest, which is probably a morphing of the original Feast of Tabernacles. Feast of Tabernacles actually had a function within their society. Everybody had their homes and their families. Every home and family usually lived within a village. And that village had groups in it. If it got to be a larger and larger village, they still had their groups of 10 families. And those 10 families picked a minister who might be a full-time minister, but he also probably took care of his own family and gardened, and he may have even produced some sort of commodity or crop that helped support him. But he was the go-to guy if there was a problem, if there was a need, if there was a dispute. He would be the guy who would say, okay, everybody get together, let's solve this. And he would reiterate usually the problem to the whole group and get their input. And if they couldn't solve it, and even if they could, he would on a regular basis communicate with 9 other ministers like himself. And what would they talk about? Problems that came up in their society, just like I'm talking about the problems of the Girl Scouts. Except they could have solved this problem. They already knew what the answer to this problem was. Networking, gathering together in cell groups, taking back your individual responsibility at the grassroots level, at the family level. Those families are autonomous families who gather together with other families and try to solve the problem. Our girls want to learn to camp. Our girls want to learn to sew. Our girls want to get together and do something of value for the homeless or for the old folks home or what have you. Or maybe they don't even know what they want to do. They just want to know what to do. And the parents get together and say, let's do something together with a bunch of girls. And so all the girls in the community get together and they accomplish something. You know, if they're going to sell cookies, they may start a business. They don't depend on Girl Scouts of America to come up with cookies that are overpriced. They go out and actually find, you know, if each of those Girl Scout troops got together, 10 or 20 of them got together and called around, and they're a nonprofit organization, so they call around, they could find some cookie manufacturer that would put their wrapping on those cookies at a fraction of the price that the main body is charging. And they wouldn't have to limit it to cookies. They could do it with all kinds of other commodities. They're nonprofit. The girls are volunteering their time. They're non-employees. Whatever they sell, that money goes to build whose camp? Their camp. Now they know this troop raised $10,000. This troop raised $5,000. This troop raised $6,000, and they get 10, 20 troops together, they can raise all the money for that camp. Right now, those Girl Scout troops should form their own groups and buy that camp back. Or what they're doing now is they're taking them to court and trying to force the issue. And, you know, they're spending more on lawyers than they were going to spend on the roof repair for those camps. The error was is they centralized things. They looked to the hierarchy of their organization to do what they should have been doing from the ground up. When the Girl Scouts finish being Girl Scouts, they should know how to run a cookie business. They should know how to run a small business and turn it into a big business. They know how to contact suppliers, contract prices, talk to printers to put their own printing on those labels, their own motto, guideline, whatever. You know, Girl Scout Entrepreneurs of America. And they could also learn roof repair. And they could do all these things. Now, you can't have them up there, young girls up on top of the roof doing that. But they could be a part of the process of finding out what it takes. They could turn those events into classes where they can't... Well, personally, I think you could get those girls up on the roof fixing it, at least the older girls. But state laws don't want your children to know how to do anything when they get out of high school. You can't get up on a ladder, you can't run a power drill, you can't do any of those things. It's just absolutely absurd, but that's because you've taken that path, same path as you see the Girl Scouts taking. You've taken it in your governments, you've taken it in your doctor's offices, you've taken it in your public schools, you've taken it everywhere. You want to get control. You have to start taking back the responsibilities. They think they're going to get control by hiring a lawyer they're going to pay a ridiculous amount of money to, who's going to go in and with the roll of the dice and the decision of a judge, they hope they'll get something back. They might as well have just gone to Las Vegas. No, I'm not going to fault them too much on trying to get the right thing done, but you need to take a look at the very foundation of the path that you followed to get you where these hierarchies and CEOs have such unbelievable power over what you do. According to the lawsuit filed by the Friends of Eagle Island, the CEO, Susan Brooks, defended the sale by saying, "I have pensions to pay." Hildebrand describes another instance where when the question by a parent as to what she'd do with the money from the sale, Brooks said that the plumbing in the Westwood, New Jersey office needed to be fixed. Well, we're talking $3 million. Needed to be fixed. The fact is that if that plumbing needed to be fixed and there isn't any of those Girl Scouts whose father's a plumber, there isn't any that could go in and supervise the work at, say, half price. You see, you're not involved in the hierarchy of your Girl Scouts. You know, you think you can elect somebody and they just go off and do it. Well, yeah, they go off and wrote themselves big pension plans and salaries and nice offices, but you don't get a roof on the clubhouse for your kids to go camping. You know, what kind of numbers are we dealing with there? One of the most contentious battles is raging in the northeastern Ohio. Five camps there are on the auction block, which would leave only two camps open for memberships of roughly 40,000 girls. 40,000 girls. I tell you, those 40,000 girls, I'd be surprised if they couldn't come up with $100 apiece. You know, if you had them in entrepreneurial, effective programs to earn money and to obtain donations to support. You know, so do the math. 40,000 girls times 10, that's a lot of money. 40,000 girls times 100, that's a lot of money. And you can't come up with a camp. You can't come up with enough to support these camps that are given you and often are tax-free. Council Board representatives defending the sales claimed that only 10% of the girls camped. To Lynn Richardson, lifetime scout troop leader and founder of Trefoloy Integrity website. I don't know what is there. I need to go look at that. She says that just doesn't ring true. There's a lot of the girls that would camp. And the fact is that that's another issue as to what are you teaching your girls? Is this just a gossip fest, you know, a gaggle of unsupervised teenagers getting together? Well, I'm sure in some instances it is, but I think in a lot of instances you have some very well-meaning mothers and troop leaders that are trying to do the best by these girls, but they have gone down the wrong path. They've given too much power to the hierarchy, and they have done this by relinquishing the control down there where the rubber meets the road. But anyway, we'll talk more about this and how this relates to what we do in every other path that we take when we come back.
My name is Mark and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hisholychurch.org, I realised that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right, but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, God bless America, and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and I took a look at that website that was mentioned in the article that we were reading, and it's trefoilintegrity.org. Trefoil, I actually don't know what that word means, but it's maybe it's a place or something. But anyway, supporting and promoting Girl Scouting in Northeast Ohio since 2000. And they have a lot of girls standing up to save our camps, and they're talking about, all agree that defining the characteristic of Girl Scouting is that it is girl-led. Girl Scout USA tried to distill the essence of their successful tradition into a six-week course that could be done anywhere by anyone, but it's not working. Meanwhile, councils are selling camps, fabricating statistics to justify the liquidation and dismissing volunteer concerns. Volunteers are what made Girl Scouts. I know it's what made Boy Scouts work. We had some very poor volunteers when I was a kid, and we had some really great volunteers. The fact is that in that volunteering, in that effort, that's what really made America great, and that's what makes Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts as good as it was getting. It's not getting that good anymore, and we could talk about the controversy with Boy Scouts and, you know, the efforts in the world today to legalize pedophilia as an alternative lifestyle. I read articles on that this week. Yeah, unbelievable. And, of course, there's nothing you can do about it because people are going to go that way. But there is something you can do about it in relationship to you. You can turn around and go another direction. And the fact is, if your churches were doing what the early church was doing, you would have the perfect format for Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts. You're not a separate group. You're a part of a network of people that care about each other. And a lot of people that are studying or learning about our network that we're setting up, the Living Network, they're saying, well, I don't know if I want to get involved. Well, do you want to help anybody else besides yourself? That's all we're doing, is trying to create an international phone tree where we have people helping one another, doing things for one another, caring about one another. I mean, this is what your focus needs to be, and the machinery of that needs to advocate that by the very machinery. That if what she says on this website, the characteristic of Girl Scouting is that it is girl-led, well, then I have to ask, which girl is doing the leading? It needs to be led by righteousness. And the girls that are righteous, because we had a Boy Scout leader who was a really bad guy when I first entered Boy Scouts. He shouldn't have been near kids. He shouldn't have been supervising or leading kids. He was irresponsible, alcoholic, bad-mouthed, corrupt individual. And fortunately, he quit shortly after I came there, but I was there long enough to see what went on. The new scoutmasters that took over were really pretty good guys, pretty decent guys. They weren't perfect, but they were pretty good. Well, the fact is if the churches were doing what they should have been doing, you wouldn't even need this framework called scouting. You had already had church. You'd already have family. You'd already have a network. Every young son and young daughter would be a part of the church, and the church would be setting up the camping trips and all this stuff through the voluntary nature of the family. But you set certain things in motion when you decide to have public school. That undermines the possibility of scouting, whether Girl Scouting or Boy Scouting, or what you want to call it, church scouts. That undermines that institution, or that part or aspect of institution. I wrote an article today, early this morning, on religions. And religions, you know, you have monotheistic religions and polytheistic religions. And that's where you have lots of different gods. And the other one is the monotheistic, where you have one god. But the funny thing is, the same thing is going on in both of those, because the one that has one god then has a bunch of angels, you know, Gabriel and Michael and all those things. And some of them, and then, of course, then you have other saints and leaders that you look up to. And the polytheistic simply divide the characteristics of God into these other personalities and character. None of that has anything to do with religion. Religion is how you take care of one another, and the truly needy or righteously needy people within your midst. And that's what religion was back in the days of Christ. It's what it was 200 years ago. Now it's commonly defined as what you think God's doing, or who do you think God is. And religions are divided into 40,000 denominations based on your opinion of God, which amounts to zero. Your opinion of God doesn't change God one bit. It's just your opinion. It's what you think. You might be right. You might be wrong. And this is why Jesus says, not those who say, Lord, Lord, but those who do it the will of my Father. You actually have to be doing the will of his Father, because you actually have a relationship with him. I'm amazed at the number of people who say that they have a relationship with Jesus, and they're doing all these other things that Jesus wouldn't have anything to do with. As a matter of fact, he even said that makes the word of God to none effect. They're deeply enmeshed in that. But they say they love Jesus. Well, he says, as many as, you know, those who love me keep my commandments. They're not keeping his commandments. They're doing something quite different from what he said to do. They don't even know it, because they've taken this path where they have given power to men who have crept into their churches and their religions and their philosophies and told them, oh, you don't have to do what Jesus said. You just have to believe. Even though Jesus said, if you don't do, even Paul said, if you're doing this, 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 and this, and this, you have no place in the kingdom of heaven. He didn't say, if you think this, 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 and this. He said, if you do this, this. So what you do can keep you out of the kingdom. What you don't do, according to Jesus, for example, the foolish virgins, can get you locked out. And if what you do is not righteousness but iniquity, that can keep you out. Nowhere are we talking about you earning a right to come in, but if you're not doing it, it's obvious you don't really believe. It's just a head thing. You're just saying it. You may have yourself convinced. You may have fooled the people around you. But anybody who knows what Jesus actually said to do, they know you're a fraud, and your faith is a fraud. Now, if you were really gathering together like the first century church, you'd probably have very little interest in the Girl Scouts, except for the fact that your neighbors might be Girl Scouts. But you wouldn't need to have that institution, because you already have church. Because church isn't about what you think about God. Church is about seeking righteousness. And what these people are noticing is that the leaders that they have chosen for themselves to rule over their institution, the Girl Scouts, and it could be the Boy Scouts, because we could sure talk about them, that they don't care what they think. That they're rulers. They exercise authority. You have to go get a lawyer and pay them a fortune to even get them to listen to you. Why is that? Because you turned down the wrong path a long time ago. You weren't doing what the early Christians were doing. Now, talk about those early Christians. Do you know what kind of people they were? And these are gutsy people. These were caring people. These are, you know, only 1 in 10 person in the modern church, I think. We can be generous. 2 in 10 people in the modern church would even come close to measuring up to the early Christians. That's absolutely right. They would only like 2 in 10. Because in the early Christianity, every member of a congregation was a participant. Every member of the congregation sacrificed daily so that men like the apostles could rightly divide the bread from house to house. Every member of the congregation shared what they had so that they could maintain the daily ministration. Here the Girl Scouts can't even keep their camp open because they've elected people that have gone the path of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and they have been ruling over your Girl Scout organization because you didn't keep responsibility and control and power where it belonged, down with the hands of the girl. I mean, this whole situation with the Boy Scouts and bringing in homosexual leaders and all this kind of stuff would just absolutely eviscerate, completely disappear, if you were to organize like the first century church. That's right. If the Boy Scouts were organized like the first century church, instantaneously that problem would go away. But they don't even know what that first century church was doing, how it was operating. They've taken a path so far away from that. They don't even know what that path is. Their preachers aren't telling them. They're not learning about it in history class in school. In many schools, they don't even have history class anymore. They have social studies that has been arranged by progressives. They don't even know what that those nations were doing, what Israel was really doing. That's another amazing thing, that most people don't know what Israel was doing. So anyway, this whole problem with the Girl Scouts could go away right now. They want to save old wineskins. They want to save an institution that was not set up correctly to begin with. And they need to turn around. They need to look at this differently and try a different way of approaching this, because they're not going to change those people that are already controlling the purse strings. I mean, they might, you know, if they'd want to take it to court, go right ahead. Going to have to pay a lawyer. Going to have lots of expenses and lots of risk. And you could lose everything. One person said, Diane Nelson said, the council is not the enemy. We are trying to figure out how to keep all four camps open. Then we're talking about in Iowa, eastern Iowa. In southeastern Pennsylvania, membership is up in arms over the devastating of the people's camps, or divesting of the people's camps. They talk about shutting down all the camps so there's no camps even near a place like Philadelphia. And one person actually said in an article, Shift for Survival, is that Girl Scout camps are their greatest asset and greatest liability. Well, reality is the greatest liability is the hierarchy of the Girl Scouts, but then now we can blame it all on them. But really, the greatest functional liability is the fact that the Girl Scouts are not in control of their own organization. It's absolutely essential for a voluntary organization to be supported from the bottom up, not from the top down. Who you put on the top needs to be the greatest servant of servants of servants of servants. As a matter of fact, the wage earners, what you call wage earners, that are in there now, CEOs and all that stuff, should receive free will offerings only with open books so that you know what they're actually getting. And if they can't make it with that, then get somebody else who will make it with what they can get. The idea of creating a guaranteed salary to run a charitable institution is you're slitting your throat to begin with. You're bringing in a spirit that is anti-voluntarism. I know you'll have people that are full-time that need to be supported, but you've lost control over that because you're not a bottom-up organization. Originally, that's where Girl Scouts started. That's how you built this. The foundation was voluntarism. There was no hierarchy to start it. It was started from the bottom up. This is what made America great. There was no government here to join. There were governors who came. They really didn't have any power over the day-to-day lives of the people. They had to go out and get it done themselves. And the Girl Scouts could get it done themselves. They have tens of thousands. They have a semblance of organization already. They need to break and start afresh. Don't try to put new wine in old wineskins. Restructure from the bottom up. And the same structure that we're using in the network is the structure you need. Is everybody who was a Girl Scout before going to be a Girl Scout? No. The new Girl Scouts will be stronger and better people by the time they're done. They have to be. Because a truly voluntary, that's what the Girl Scouts are. It should be a voluntary society. Boy Scouts, same thing. And they are just auxiliaries of the volunteer society that is taking care of everything else. And I know people think, well, there's no way we can do that. It's been done before. And if you don't do it that way, whatever system you create will eventually decay and destroy itself. The bigger it gets, the harder it will fall. The more complex it gets, the harder it will fall. There's just no, it's a history repeats itself. It just goes on and on and on. So anyway, what can we learn from all this? One person said the fight to keep the contested camps open has drawn back the curtain on the organization's funding problems. The fact is, it's really, if you draw that curtain all the way back, you'll see that it's taken a look at the pathway that the people have gone. They have given power to this organizational hierarchy instead of to themselves. And one of the complaints they have is this supposedly moving away from camping, something that has actually started a while ago, where now you're getting like Studio 2B curriculums that are coming in that the kids are supposed to start studying these different things, including finances and different things like that, which sounds good on the surface, but what's actually happening is somebody else is inventing these programs and sending them down to the girls, saying you should be interested in that. So it's not born out of the heart of the interest. One of the things you learn in homeschooling is there are certain basics that everybody has to learn in homeschooling, reading, writing, arithmetic. But you're going to find that suddenly a child is going to be interested in literature. Suddenly they're going to be interested in math. Suddenly they're going to be interested in astronomy or what have you. One of my sons learned math because he got interested in a project that required math. Most of the math that he's learned since then has to do with automobiles and engines and farm equipment and the such, because that's his interest. Others got interested, like I said, in astronomy. Others got interested in history, and they know all kinds of stuff, and they follow that. What you have to do is create an environment in which they're not sitting in front of a computer game all day, or they're not idling away time here or there. It's like you want them to eat the right kind of food. You cannot fill your refrigerator with junk food. You fill it with good foods, and they'll learn to eat good foods, because very few kids will starve themselves to death. If there's good food around, that's what they'll eat. And it's the same thing as what you're creating with your scout troop should be an environment in which the children's interests can go this way and that way. And they've actually decreased the amount of merit badges that they can get. So they tunneled the vision of the children. And they're taking these girls in the wrong direction because they're not run by the girls and their interests and their enthusiasms. They're run by somebody from the top down. One of the comments was, this is like school. And of course, that's one of the problems. They shouldn't be like school, and the school shouldn't be like schools. The schools should be like families. The schools should be like life. And life gets a little messy and disorganized. But if you have the right kind of people and the right heart and the right attitude of voluntary service one to another, you'll get a different product. That's why homeschoolers are scoring way higher. And they know way more because they're not studying just for this test. I'll give you another little example. The average box of Girl Scout cookies costs from $3.50 to $4. Who gets the money? Well, about 90 cents of that goes to the supplier. That's right, 90 cents. That's what the supplier charges for the box of a $3.50 or $4 box of cookies. So that leaves you $3 left over that can go to somebody. Guess where it goes? 50 cents goes to the troop itself. 50 cents. So now you got $2.50 or $2 and some odd cents to go to what? The hierarchy. Ah, should not be that way. And doesn't have to be that way. There's not a reason in the world that the Girl Scout troops themselves cannot get together. You're going to have to divest yourself to simply unvolunteer, get out of that, start calling other troop leaders, start talking to them, and let's say, look, we're going to start our own thing. Call it something else, something other than Girl Scouts, because they won't let you use that name. I'm sure you can come up with something. You don't have to call it anything right now. It's people to people. Troop leaders to troop leaders, getting together with other people. I mean, what was the name of that one website? Not a very catchy name. Trefoil Integrity. I'm sure you could come up with a better name or a different name than Girl Scouts and let the girls choose. Let them all figure out what they want to call themselves. It's not important. It's what you do. And what you do needs to be to start doing it yourself. And if you couldn't get 10 Girl Scout groups or 20 Girl Scout troops together and call up a supplier and say, we want to buy cookies, who prints the labels? We'll get the same labels, but we'll put our name on it and we'll sell the cookies. And now you could sell those boxes of cookies for $2 a box. $2 a box. And you would come out with twice as much money in your pocket as a troop. Then that troop decides where it goes. They sit down. Your troop leader is going to sit down voluntarily with 20 other troop leaders and say, this is what we got. This is what we got. We all look at the books and say, what can we do with this? And we say, we can open this camp. We can buy this camp. And you sign on to that. And the camp runs itself, supports itself. And now it's the girls' camp. It actually belongs to them, not to the administration. It belongs to them. They sold the cookies. They picked their scout leader. They made it happen themselves from the bottom up. And of course, I don't want, 12-year-old girls electing the scout leaders, but the parents of the 12-year-old girl electing the scout leader and sending them as their representative. The money belongs to that troop. They take what portion of it they want. They give to the hierarchy, and you will have a lean and mean hierarchy who will get the job done, and pension or no pension, those girls would have a camp to go to. And they would change the nature of those girls, improve the nature of those girls, improve the nature of their life, which is what Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts was all about to begin with. Taking back, to be prepared to do it yourself. So anyway, the Just Do It Girls, that's a pretty good name, but anyway, you figure it out. But get together, join us on the network, and start doing it yourself. Till then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.